This is live from my office, and I thank you for finding it, listening to it, downloading it, sharing it with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe, by the way. Please do that wherever you get your podcast, wherever you got this one. Hit that subscribe or follow button, and I appreciate it very much. I'm playing hurt today, kids. You know, we live in a time where we share everything, so I'm sharing this with you. I'm an idiot. Some of you, that may not be new information, but playing golf, as I do most days, I got up early for a tee time, didn't stretch, and really hurt my back. So if you're any whimpering during this podcast, it's not because I got a new dog. It could be me. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, some very sobering numbers from Dr. Kevin Most on COVID-19. And again, a plea from both of us to put your mask on. I'm going to tell you a secret. I am so concerned about these numbers. I wear a mask when I'm around myself because I don't know what I have. Thanks for listening. Again, this is Live from My Office. This is Live from My Office, presented by Team Hochberg and my friend David Hochberg. We thank you for the partnership and really looking forward to it. Speaking of Hochberg, you know, my sister just refied her house for the second time with Team Hochberg. You guys all know John DeCoss. John DeCoss was having some issues and had some debt issues. He basically was a drifter going from town to town, just stumbling into saloons. But he reached out to Hochberg, and he was able to get him out of debt, enhance his credit, refinance his previous home, helped him secure the financing on a new home, and John has never been happier. And how is he paying it forward? Well, he's mowing David's lawn, but he's also telling people about Team Hochberg. You want to know more, and you should, because I'm telling you, rates are so low now, it's ridiculous. If there was some good news to come out of this crazy year we're in, this is probably near the top of the list. He's got a passion for helping listeners. He helped me with our loan when we finished off this house that I'm currently broadcasting from. I don't know if you heard, I'm live from my office. He did my daughter's loan and her first house as well. Point being, I trust him, and that's why I recommend David Hochberg and Team Hochberg. Here's what you do. You pick up the phone. You call 855-56-DAVID. Website is easy to remember, too. It's 56david.com. Refinance to pay off your debt. Reverse mortgage information right there as well. Help you purchase a new home. I trust him. He's David Hochberg. It's Team Hochberg. There's nobody better when it comes to your home. Live from my office with the number one most requested guest. You didn't even know we were taking requests. It's Dr. Kevin Most. Doctor, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time people are listening.
Well, how are you doing today?
You know, I did a dumb thing as an old guy. I played some golf without stretching, and I guess I threw my back out. What's the technical definition of throwing your back out?
Yeah. You know, there's so many issues with back pain and so many different things. You know, hopefully it's just a ligament. It could just be a muscle. Sometimes it's some tendons. But for the most part, you know, we get concerned mainly about discs. And those are the little cushions between our backbones, which protect our bones and actually protect our nerves as well. So it could be a whole bunch of things. And, you know, if you look at everybody in history, estimates are that about 85 to 90% of people will have some type of significant back pain at some time through their lives. So it's not a rarity anymore. And with some of the things that we do, it's going to make it worse. So, yeah, you just touch yourself to make sure that you stretch first, which is important. Now it's going to be take Advil and ice until you cool it down to see if it's anything serious.
You know, you make a good point, though. Ice, heat, ice. Do you alternate? What's the best course of action with that?
Well, you know, ice for the first 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Ice is something that ice works just like Advil, right? Our goal in the first 24 hours is to minimize the inflammation. So we don't want the additional fluids and additional swelling to go in at that point. Ice will keep that down. And I go ice 24 hours. After 24 hours, ice is not going to do anything. Any of the inflammation that was going to occur because of the body's injury has already occurred or you've already slowed it. So at that point, then it's going to be anti-inflammatories. And after a day or two, then you are going to want to start to get some moist heat, not dry heat, not a heating pad. You have access to a whirlpool. That's great. Showers with warm water is great. But really, you don't want that dry heat. So a couple things are, one, you can burn your skin, and two, actually causes more problems and can cause the inflammation that you just prevented the day before.
That's interesting. So why does that work better?
You know, the moist heat, as far as the percussion portion of it in whirlpools and, you know, any other percussion kind of showers, and that is great because it's a massage as well as the warmth. The dry heat, really, the biggest thing with dry heat is you can't control how deep it's going to go. And often it will stay superficial and it will feel warm. And all that really is going to do is make the increased blood flow to the skin on the top, which really won't do much help of anything. So really, if you have access to a hot tub, you know, that's going to be the best thing after, you know, another probably 24 hours.
And one more for people, since everybody gets back pain, these pain patches that Shaq wants me to use, what about those?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of these salon pods and a lot of these other patches right now. A lot of them are topical lidocaine, so it's the same kind of pain medication that that we might use for some injections. They work okay superficially, so again, if it's something that is not really, really deep, they may work well. Two, it kind of reminds you that it's there and reminds you that you have some discomfort, so it makes you think a little bit more about it. A lot of people swear by them, and a lot of people think they're really not going to do anything. It's more, you need more systemic than you need local. But they are very popular. I have never personally used them, so I can't give you a testimonial by any means.
Is that like the BioFreeze that we've used on golf courses and sports injuries as well, or is that different?
Yeah, no. The BioFreeze is obviously, you know, cold. I mean, it's liquid nitrogen often, where it's, you know, coming out in a spray form to, you know, they use it for baseball players all the time that get hit by pitches. They use it again, and that's going to be to minimize inflammation right away and to help minimize some of the cell damage. Where the others, the patches, the icy hots and the salon pods and all that are actually medication that is being absorbed into the skin, causing the skin to increase the blood flow. That's why it kind of gets warm, because mm-hmm. you have this, what we call vasodilatation. The small capillaries get larger and they bring more blood to the surface, and it feels good. But as far as how well it works, not a lot. I wish I could tell you more. I'm not so sold on them.
Depends on the person, I'm sure. And
The injury.
And the injury. Well, how about that, Doc? My stupidity leads to you educating us on something that affects almost everybody.
Yeah.
But it's not the first time my stupidity has led to something.
Nah,
that's,
you know,
beneficial.
What? I'm glad you said it, because I was ready to.
All right, well, let's talk about what's on everybody's mind. And you and I have been talking about this since it began, of course, and that's COVID-19. The map is not pretty. And the surrounding states to Illinois, where you and I are, have certainly had some dramatic numbers, Indiana in particular. What do we know and where are we going?
Yeah, the numbers are concerning. And even when you look at our map and whatever channel you're looking at, we still seem to be one of the lighter colors, whether we're white and not red or whether we're pink and not dark red. The one good thing I think that the governor did, I shouldn't say the one good thing, one of the good things that the governor did, you know, initially when we were looking at this, he broke this area, the state, up into four areas. And now he has really broken it down more into a micro level, where I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there's either 11 or 13 areas. Mm-hmm. So now we can at least have local health departments starting to work on this, because this is a local issue. So if you look up here in Cook and DuPage, you know, you're seeing a positivity rate in the 4-5% rate. And you're looking at testing rates that are in the tens of thousands every day. Go down to Southern Illinois and you see the disparities, where we're now seeing rates in the 11%, 12%, 10.5%. And the bad thing is that the number of testing that they're doing is extremely low. In some counties, you know, under 1,000 tests. So personally, I'm discouraged for the first time in a long time that we're starting to go in the wrong direction. And we couldn't do it at worse timing, as we're looking at trying to make a decision on what we're going to do with schooling of not only grade school kids, but high school kids.
So this is where it feels really helpless for people, right? Because we've kind of decided that testing is really ineffective unless we have some sort of standard that we're going to get it back in short order, because by the time you get it back, you've been exposed to a bunch of other people. And we don't know what to do to help other than the obvious. Wash your hands, wear the mask. Am I missing something?
No, you know, and it, you kind of hit it on the head. You know, we look at all these tests that we're doing, and I just quoted, what I want to say, Cook County's like 45,000 tests a day. But if the results aren't coming back for 10 days, 14 days, 15 days, the impact of that test is totally worthless. So, I mean, we should be doing more. We should be doing less tests, more organized in hotspots with quick turnaround time so that we can get some results back that are actually meaningful. So that if I find an individual who is asymptomatic and positive, that we can isolate them at that time and importantly do it. So it's really one of those where the tardiness of the result of the test makes it a complete waste of money and time because by the time we're getting the results back, the patient's no longer contagious, and who knows what they've done for the past 10, 14, 15 days.
So, you know, you and I both know that it's a minority of people who are getting the majority of internet play for their insane, selfish behavior when it comes to masks. But there are people out there that just won't wear them. You know, the arguments are ridiculous. We don't even have to get into it. There's no constitutional right not to wear a mask. We urge you to do the right thing, but if you're not going to do it, you're not going to do it. What do we do? Just stay away from those people if we see them coming? Treat them like the scourge on society that they now are?
Well, you know, just like when you were a little kid, if you were walking down the street and you saw somebody in front of you that looked a little crazy, you crossed the street.
There you go.
You know, now it's a lot easier because they don't have to be, you know, doing something irrational or erratic for you to see. You can easily see that they don't. You know, they're not wearing a mask, or anybody in a public area to stay away from them. But it's very interesting. If we could really just convince everybody to wear masks for a good, you know, couple of weeks and really just bear down on this, we would be doing so much better. And those same individuals that say that they're not going to wear a mask are going to, you know, probably be the first ones in line to say, well, I want the vaccine now.
Sure.
You know, and we're going to have issues, obviously, when we come up with the distribution of the vaccine of who's going to get it first. Certainly I would say that individuals who have been following what we've been preaching and asking should be the ones that are rewarded first with it. But that's impossible to police.
The politics spill over into this discussion, even though it's not the area that you prefer to talk about. And it's the area that makes my giant head explode. But the president going after Dr. Fauci and now Dr. Birx, these are two people with really impeccable credentials. And Dr. Fauci at 79 could very easily be enjoying the fourth quarter of his life and not getting involved with being threatened online and various other things. And now we've got Trump on Twitter calling Deborah Birx pathetic because she said she's concerned about the numbers. You know, you don't want to keep beating a dead horse here because his selfishness and his narcissism are not something that's going to change. But it does affect the public perception of the people we need to hear from most. And even in a small number, that public perception is a really big deal because it affects how they behave.
Yeah. You know, it's also often when I'm looking at this, it's almost schizophrenic-like, you know, that, you know, one day he's, oh, they're my best friends, and I so respect them and everything they do, and then other times he does this. From just a truly objective step back and listen, if you had two people standing in front of you, and one of them was the most renowned expert on infectious diseases in the country, and the other was a real estate person or the president, I don't even care what you want to call them, and you were going to talk about an infectious disease, who are you going to listen to?
Right.
If you're going to listen, if you want me to say, hey, I don't know how to get funding or a loan to build a building and zoning, you know, I'll listen to Donald Trump. But boy, when people's lives are in place, let's step back and let the experts tell us what is going on. And Fauci is so well respected across all the medical profession. You have not heard one doctor step up and say anything bad about Fauci, right? Because not only is he brilliant, he knows how to handle changes and adversity. Think about it. When this first started, we do nothing. And he took the tentative route, careful route to let the science play out. And boy, you know, he's gained the respect of every physician in this country. And it should be every person in this country. But if you're going to go and ask a doctor, hey, is Fauci one we should believe? 100% will say yes.
Yeah, there's no political conspiracy here, folks. There's just not. The science is what the science is. And science, by definition, is evidence leads to conclusion, which leads to actions. And that's what we're following here. And that's what Fauci is. Fauci could be doing every single talk show. He could be throwing the president under the bus. He could be treating the president as poorly as he's been treated. But he's not doing that because he's a professional and he ultimately cares what happens to the rest of us and what happens to his own family and his grandkids and so on and so on. It's really maddening to hear the kind of talk that's gone on, even in small numbers. And also to have these people that don't want to wear masks when your people are wearing them all day, every day.
Yeah, it really is frustrating. And, you know, when everybody looks at numbers and, you know, 155,000 deaths, those are 155,000 individuals that didn't have to die. And I hate to say it, guys, but there's multiples of those people that have been injured from this illness that are going to have chronic illness and disease and not live the lives, the quality of life that they expected they would be living a year ago at this time. So anybody who says it's a hoax, you know what? Come visit me. I'll show you our intensive care unit. I'll show you people. You know, we were very fortunate at Northwestern to do double lung transplants on two COVID patients that got a set of lungs because COVID ravaged their lungs to a point where they were going to die. So amazing what we've done for the medical field, and frustrating with everything that we're doing to put out the fires, to slow down the spread, that individuals are out there not thinking about that and thinking about just themselves. And I mean, I hate to say it, but in the long run, we're all going to pay for this.
That's
from
true.
A financial point of view, from a personal point of view, from a social point of view, from employment, I don't care how you look at it, we're all going to pay for it. So anybody who says, hey, let's just extend this longer, you make absolutely no sense. So.
And two last statistical points before I ask you about some very current issues related to this. One is, yes, a lot of older people near the end of their lives are victims of COVID because it is such a nasty condition. But I would ask you, if you want to write those folks off, if they're your grandfather or grandmother or mother or dad, or you someday, are you going to want to just go, well, I had my run, now I've got COVID, I guess that's just what happens? There's really a heartless, it's childish, it's mean. There's a terrible nature to that whole argument.
It's worse than that. You know, the individuals that we saw die from this illness often died lonely because of restrictions that we had to put in place. You know, we would allow family members to come up for their final moments, but those final days, we couldn't. We had to protect everybody in the hospital and everybody in the public, you know, from this illness as much as we could. That's not how anybody wants to die. And it's a terrible disease. Anybody who says it's a hoax, anybody who says it's just minor influenza, you know, you're fortunate because you're in an age demographic where it may not impact you. But if you're going to be the vector to spread it to someone that can really be harmed, well, I wouldn't want that on my conscience if I knew that I was the vector.
And the last thing in regards to the politics of this is 155,000 dead. It climbs every moment of every day. We don't have the political breakdown of those people, but if you want to talk politics, I can pretty much guarantee you that a large chunk of those folks were Republicans. And if you are a believer that this is somehow some plot to get Republicans or get Trump, just think about it. The disease doesn't care what your politics are. And there's a lot of folks that have died of both parties. So just drop it, right?
Yeah, it's forget about it. You know, let's just go back to science. Let's go back to what can we do to curtail, to flatten this, to slow it down. Everyone has to understand we're coming into flu season here very soon.
Yeah, this on top of that, if you
think we had a mess in the spring, you just wait to see what happens this fall.
Yeah, I mean, that is a scary scenario. Let me talk with you about school for a second before we run out of time. A lot of these schools are being asked to make their own decisions. That's good on one hand because they know their own space and physicality of their property and building and buses and all of that. But without a standardized system, it does put a lot of extra pressure on them to keep not just kids but teachers safe. Are you guys in the medical community being consulted about whether schools should be opened?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Not as much as we thought we would. We've had some school districts that have come to us after they've realized they're kind of in a predicament or the issue that they're in. And you know, I've spoken to our doctors and I said, you guys are going to be looked at as experts. When you say something about whether kids should go back to school, don't say it about your family personally. Don't say it about your own demographics or your own socioeconomic. Make sure that you talk as an expert because your voice is going to carry that as an expert. I say that because 22 million children rely on the school meal program for at least one, if not two, of their daily meals for nutrition. 20%, over 20% of child abuse and neglect is identified and referred by teachers. Think about the kids that have some form of learning disability, which in some estimates is over 20% as well. That's not only identified by a teacher, but the highly trained individuals like your daughter who know how to treat and teach these patients
right,
so that they can become, you know, great people later in their lives. All of these things have to be taken into consideration. 20% of teachers say they're not going to return if school opens. You know, we have a big issue that we're trying to clear up, and we're trying to figure out exactly what we're going to do as more and more schools ask us for recommendations. They are asking us about testing. Can we test our entire school? Well, no, the burden of that is going to be almost impossible when you start to look at large groups.
Yeah, and you look at some of these western suburb large high schools, northern suburbs as well, with 3,000 to 5,000 kids. Okay, you test them all in the course of 2 days, and it takes a week to get those tests back. The tests mean nothing.
Well, not only does tests mean nothing, those same individuals are going back into their homes now at that point, and now the test is only good for that snapshot. And
right,
unless you knew right away to isolate those, you've actually not done anything that's going to improve the problem.
Do we know scientifically, to the best of our knowledge, if there is a way to do school in person, plexiglassed off teachers and students and things of that nature in smaller groups? You know, talking about alternating, talking about pods. They're trying to, I mean, the schools and the teachers and the folks, they're doing their best to try to figure this out. But does science believe there's a way to do this in person, or is science saying, no, you got to stay home until further notice?
No. I think science says, hey, you know, there's a way to do it as long as you can live with the constraints of what we're going to, you know, to recommend. You know, masking, distancing, the same things we're asking for people to do in restaurants, essentially, we would ask to do in the schools. The difficult thing is these schools were not built to do it this way. So it's going to be very difficult. How do you take a classroom of 26 kids or 22 kids and look at it? And if you wanted to space the room properly, you're down to 8 kids. You know, it's going to be very difficult. Then we're just saying that's in the classroom. Tell me how they're going to get to the school with busing. Tell me how they're going to get into the classroom without really having large interactions in the hallways. Tell me what you're going to do about sporting activities and gym classes. So there's a lot of unknowns, and the thing that kind of surprises me is that we're this late in the year and no one has really come to the medical field or whatever back in May and said, okay, what are we going to do in August? You know, it's kind of like, I'm sure they were thinking about it, but I'm not sure that they had the medical backing behind it of here's what our recommendation would be.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people aren't talking to the people they ought to be talking to and vice versa. Last thing in schools is colleges and kids going off to college. You know, what happens at this point in relation to colleges? Because it's clear that when you're living close to other people, and then going to school with them, I mean, just common sense says you're more likely to get what they've got.
Very possible. I mean, the college situation is going to be a fascinating incubator, I guess I would say. You know, if you want to try to get herd immunity, then let's try to put as many college kids as we can in a very enclosed area and keep them there for 4 months. You know, if they're saying, you know what, we're going to end school around Thanksgiving and take a large break, the testing that should be done as they're leaving school is not whether they have COVID coming home, but were they exposed and did they get over it already during the last 4 months while they were there? So I think kids will be good. College kids will be good wearing masks in class because they're going to be told. But after that, I'm not sure. You know, you take some college kids that are pretty smart and you take others that are going to be pretty independent. And we could be in a world of hurt come Thanksgiving.
It's disappointing to hear that you're less optimistic because you're a very optimistic guy, but you're on the front lines of this. And that concerns me that you're seeing things that we at least felt like we're headed in that direction. But as you said, if we all play along, nobody wants to stand in 6-foot circles. Nobody wants to wear a mask. Nobody wants to not be able to hug their friends when they see them and all the other things that go with living a normal life. The only way we get back to that in the shortest order is to do this stuff we don't want to do right now. I just wish you, I hope everybody listening to this spreads that word.
Yeah, and I don't mean to be discouraged. I just know what potentially can happen to the healthcare system across this country. And you've taken a healthcare system and you have stressed it across the country. And you have beat up the nurses and you beat up the doctors and you beat up the staff. And they're getting a little bit of a breath in some areas of the country right now, including us. We're at least allowing people to go on vacation if they can go on vacation. But come the fall, if we have to go through what we did on the spring with even greater numbers, boy, this is going to really stress this country beyond what we've considered. If you remember when New York was really getting heavily hit and Chicago was just kind of stepping up, we were concerned about ventilators and we were moving ventilators around the country. Take that now and put it where this is across the entire country and who's going to get the ventilators? Who's going to get the PPE? Who's going to get all of the supplies that are necessary? Because as influenza hits, we need a lot of that stuff as well. So we have that big concern. This would be 1 year I would tell people, please get a flu shot this year. It's one thing that's going to protect you from one of the two illnesses that's going to confuse the medical field as to when you come in with your fever, body aches, cough, do you have influenza or do you have COVID? And we're going to have to jump through a lot of hoops and use a lot of equipment to prove which illness you have.
Yeah, we're talking about the second wave of COVID, the overlap of COVID and influenza. I mean, you know, people aren't even discussing that until, you know, you're talking about it here. And man, that is scary.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure it's going to be the second wave of COVID. The second wave of COVID would imply that we cooled down the entire country and got a little bit of a break.
Yeah, which we haven't done.
We have not. And now, unfortunately, these areas are starting to pop up again where we thought we were behind or where we thought it was behind us a little bit. I think the next few weeks you're going to be looking at numbers in Illinois and the governor may have to step up. You know, if his number is going to be 8%, 10%, he's got a handful of counties already at 10%. He's got a bunch that are pushing 6 and 7. You know, he may have to make some statements here quickly to slow this down again here. We've been very fortunate in Illinois.
It's Dr. Kevin Most. Always appreciate what you're able to do and teach us and tell us. And I hope you appreciate that for the course of this conversation, I didn't whimper once about my bad back because I didn't move an inch to the right or left. So I feel fine.
Oh, you hurt
right
your
now.
Back?
Oh. Did I not tell you?
No. Well, you probably did. I wasn't listening.
You know me. But, I rarely complain.
Yeah. But, you know, next week or later this week, let's talk about something positive. Hopefully we'll have some more vaccine news or some more vaccine updates. Because I want to talk about some positive stuff, because I do. I feel like this one was probably one of our biggest downers. But I'm just concerned, and I think sometimes you have to come across as discouraged as I am to get across a message of, boy, this is in our hands right now, you guys. We will have no one to blame but ourselves if this fall is a bad one.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And don't feel badly about it being a downer, because it's all truth. And we got to hear the truth to react to it. Thank you, Dr. Kevin Most. As you know, you've been on Live from My Office. He's a good man, and I'm glad we know him, and I'm glad we always have access to Dr. Kevin Most. Remember, you can email me anytime at thecochranshow@gmail.com. And since Dr. Most joins us every week, if you've got a question or a comment you'd like to throw his way, send it to me at thecochranshow.com. More coming up on Live from My Office. Live from My Office would not be possible without the help of great partners like Team Hochberg, and specifically David Hochberg. I've known David for a long time. Some people think that I may have bailed him out of prison at some point. No, that wasn't me. But David Hochberg's had a very interesting career as well. He's done a lot of different things, been successful at all of them, but I think this is the niche, because for many, many years now, he's been helping listeners get the most out of their homes, whether it's a financing of a new home, a refi, helping out with something like a reverse mortgage. Look, he knows the money stuff that you and I and most people glaze over about. Now, how do I know that? Well, because I use David Hochberg. I've used him before. I'd use him again. He helped me with a refi of a home equity loan. In addition to that, he's working with my daughter on a refi of her first home. And my sister's used him twice. Good enough for my family, you bet. And my friends too, like John DeCoste. And by the way, a million other people who worked with me at WGN. Just about everybody there at one point or another consulted David Hochberg for help in regards to maximizing the value of their home and maximizing their money, because he knows this stuff. And don't lose sight of the fact that your credit could be enhanced by one of the Hochberg team members. He's got a guy who is so good, he can take you from the front of the limo to the back of the limo in short order with some tricks and tips that are perfectly legal that you would never know about and I would never know about. But again, this individual is part of Team Hochberg. It's David Hochberg, Team Hochberg, making the most of your money, making you feel better, and taking some of that pressure off. You know, the weight of it when you think, look at this monthly payment, especially now in COVID year. So take advantage of David Hochberg. Make sure you pick up the phone. Go to Team Hochberg's website. That's 56david.com. Or you can call him up, 855-56-DAVID. David Hochberg, 855-56-DAVID or 56david.com. You know, through the years, you have been nice enough to support the various charitable causes that I've gotten behind and tried to help. And I want to feature a different charitable cause that matters, that I have a relationship with, or maybe have developed a new one. And today it's Rebecca's Dream. My short story is this. Rebecca Cutler was a very good friend of mine. Beautiful, funny, talented, terrific writer at Chicago Magazine. She battled bipolar disorder, and at the age of 30, she took her own life. It's not an unusual story for those who deal with bipolar disorder, but her legacy is this. It's Rebecca's Dream, an amazing organization, because she wanted to help others not have to go through the pain that she so often had to go through herself. And as always, if you're ever feeling like hurting yourself, please call 800-273-TALK. I know I'm giving you a lot of numbers here. We'll put these at CochranShow.com as well and in the show notes. But 800-273-TALK is a number to keep handy. There's always tomorrow. I want to thank you again for listening and subscribing to Live from My Office. Listen wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe wherever you can, and it's appreciated. By the way, one quick plug. We're well inside 100 days before the election, and on Twitter, at Cochran Show, I hope you'll follow me there, because each day I'm featuring a historical perspective, if you will, of the last 4 years in America. I'm calling it the Trump dump, where each day I will give you an actual fact, not an alternative fact, not a fake fact, but a fact fact. And each day it'll be something that you may have forgotten that will ultimately remind you of the mess that we're in and the changes that need to be made. It's the Trump dump. Follow me at Cochran Show on Twitter. Don't know how to get on Twitter? Have your grandson show you, or your granddaughter. This is Steve Cochran, and thank you as always for listening to Live from My Office.
Live from My Office is a product of Monkey Run Productions. All rights reserved. Live from My Office is mixed, edited, and produced by me, Ross Cochran, and hosted by Steve Cochran. Let us know what you think about a specific episode by leaving a comment wherever you're listening, or you can email questions and comments to thecochranshow@gmail.com. Steve is available for your corporate speaking gigs, you would love to host or MC your event, and occasionally, he's funny. Thank you for listening. Head to cochranshow.com for more.